New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. We are back after a one-week hiatus to talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a Houston restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. He is the owner of Craft Pita. Rafi Nasser, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Eric. Excited for a new year of restaurants and podcasts.
Well, thank you for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Rocket Farm Restaurants, the Atlanta-based hospitality group behind State of Grace, La Lucha, and Little Ray, announced that it is closing its Tex-Mex restaurant, Super Rica, and it is replacing it with Star Rover, which I am describing as a casual steakhouse. Rafi, what do you make of this? I mean, it's unusual for a Tex-Mex restaurant to close. It's a very durable concept, especially in Houston. So are you a Super Rica fan?
I'm definitely a fan. Me and my wife would do frequent date nights over to Super Rica. You know, it's an easy place to get fajitas for two and a margarita. We would, you know, frequently go after like picking up an underground creamery or something like that. If we were in the area, say, hey, let's go grab some ice cream and stop by for dinner. We would also do brunch and get those infamous pancakes, which I saw they're going to keep on the menu. I was a fan. I thought it was one of the higher quality options for Tex-Mex. I worked in Tex-Mex for many years, so I'm pretty picky when it comes to my Tex-Mex, and this was definitely cracked the list for me frequently.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the fajitas, because fajitas are my go-to at any Tex-Mex restaurant, especially, you know, Candente, Papacitos, places like that. Super Rica is the one place where more often than not, I would get enchiladas or tacos or just something a little bit different. It's kind of what I liked about it is that it had all the Tex-Mex staples, but it just presented them. Like I'd say they were plated a little more nicely. You know, I thought the presentation was a little more refined. You know, I like that kind of retro touches in the dining room. I really thought their margaritas were really good. They make a good Paloma. And like you said, I think, you know, brunch was the big winner. You know, everybody loves those pancakes. And so, you know, this wasn't like, it's not like the Tex-Mex, my go-to Tex-Mex, right? It's a little bit far from me in terms of distance for that. But, you know, it's a restaurant that I thought did a good job. And even with as much kind of Tex-Mex as there is, you know, in and around the Heights, I mean, you know, there's that El Tiempo on Washington, and then there's the Good Company Kitchen and Cantina on Yale Street, and Amalatina is right down the street from them on Shepherd. And then you've got the Teotihuacan on Airline. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff, but still I thought, you know, this is a restaurant that I value and I thought did a good job. And so I was surprised to see this decision by Ford Fry, the owner of Rocket Farm, to kind of move away from it and pivot to Star Rover. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, I'm a steakhouse guy. I like a fine dining steakhouse for, you know, special occasions. And I like a, you know, a bar style steak night for a casual weeknight kind of thing. And this seems to kind of slot somewhere in the middle, you know, somewhere in that kind of Saltgrass, Texas Roadhouse kind of vibe. But I would think probably better executed, or at least my expectations are that it'll be better executed than a chain restaurant.
Yeah, I think you kind of pointed what the main issue was 7 years ago when Super Rica opened. This was one of the few Tex-Mex options of a nicer dining experience. And even something like Good Eco Cantina opening up a few years ago could take away enough business. Maybe that's what happened. I'm not quite sure. This was actually the last job I applied for before I opened Craft Pita 7 years ago. I applied for the GM position and decided to go my own way. But I can tell you 7 years ago, when I was looking at the numbers of what a Papacitos was doing, Tex-Mex was difficult economically. The price of skirt steak, the price of limes, the price of avocados. It is difficult to make things on anything other than enchiladas. A lot of dairy. Dairy is expensive. So maybe that's what led to this. And, you know, I do think what they're switching to, there seems to be a lack of that's not the salt grasses of the world, to your point. Like a semi-affordable steak, like, can you, where do you get that? That's not at a bar. Like, I don't know.
Right. I mean, you know, a prime steak, like at a nice steakhouse, is a $60, $70, even $80 entree. And so it's really kind of pushed into that, you know, special occasion kind of territory, even at, you know, restaurants that aren't steakhouses, but that serve steak, right? Like if you go to, you know, Blue Dorn or somewhere like that, like the steak is obviously going to be the most expensive thing on the menu. But like, I mean, like Barnaby's serves a casual steak, or like Houston's, I guess, if I'm just to bump it up just a little bit. But there's nothing about, you know, Hillstone or Jay Alexander's or whatever that's distinct. I mean, that's kind of their role in the world is to be, you know, nondescript and welcoming to all people. And so, you know, a steak place with a little personality, a little Texas flair, like that. I don't know. They said they're going to have a couple of skee ball machines in the dining room. I'm not sure that the opportunity to play skee ball is going to make me go to a restaurant, but you know, I do like, one of the things I'm intrigued about is that, you know, for your $45 or whatever you pay for the steak, you get a salad, you get bread, you get onion rings and French fries. And so it's a complete meal. And, you know, at a steakhouse, like at a fine dining steakhouse, everything's a la carte. So, you know, your steak is $65 and then your mashed potatoes are another 12. And sure, it's big enough to split, but, you know, it adds up fast. So an all-in kind of pricing model and a limited menu with, you know, maybe a few appetizers and a couple of desserts, I think that's really appealing.
I saw the video they posted. It looks great. The food looks delicious. I think the limited menu it's good for a few things. One, it's very executable from the back of house side. From the front of house side, it allows you to pitch some, you know, some of those other appetizers that looks like they have, and allows you to focus on drinking. I could see this being like every single table's got cocktails or wine on the table. Four Fry Concepts, in my opinion, they don't really miss. They're attract, every single one of these has been attractive. I've been to a few of his in Atlanta as well. And then when you have someone like Bobby running the show, like they're just, I do think this is going to do well. Especially there's very few affordable steakhouses in the city. There's no affordable steakhouses in the Heights. I'm excited for this. Well, how about we play a game of skee ball for whoever pays for the first round of steaks?
Yeah, no, I, you know, we could have a little fun, right? We could do the, we could do like a steak frites off. We could go to, and then just go to Agnes and Sherman and do the bang bang, right? The 19th Street steak frites bang bang. I think that's how this is going to go.
I had that steak frites from there for the first time the other day. It somehow had not made my round of visits, and it's excellent.
Then Star Rover's going to have to bring it.
I think they'll bring it. I this is Houston. Steaks, drinks, and onion rings and salad. Like, I don't doubt it'll do well.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to topic number two. Benji Mason, who we know from his ownership of Johnny's Gold Brick, Winnie's, and Starduster, has partnered with chef Jason Kerr of Little Kitchen in Jersey Village to open Shredders, a delivery and to-go-focused pizzeria in the Heights. Part of the appeal is that it will have affordable wines to go. When I talked to Benji, he said he wants a pizza that travels well, that's made with ingredients he can feel good about, and with flavors that will satisfy families with kids, right? Like, he likes artisan pizzerias like, you know, Pizarro's and Gypsy Poet and some of that stuff. But when he takes his kids there, they're not as excited about those restaurants. And so Shredders is kind of designed to fill that gap, you know, be better than a delivery chain restaurant, but not quite as fancy as, you know, Gypsy Poet or the one in First Ward on Houston Avenue, whose name I can't think of right now.
Beetlejuice.
No, darn
Coastline.
Coastline. Thank you. Yes. apologies to Armando, who was on this podcast less than 6 months ago, Coastline. So some sort of a compromise. And so I said, well, you know, it sounds a little like Home Slice. And he goes, well, yeah, it's a little like Home Slice, but, you know, very to-go focused. Like they're going to have 12 seats or something. So the idea is that you get it to go. I don't know, Rafi, you're not a family man yet, but you're about to be. Does this sound like something that would appeal to you?
I think for sure there is a big difference between dine-in versus delivery pizza. Your dough needs to have structure, your ratio of sauce to cheese versus toppings. The quality of the cheese and type of cheese used is very different for something that has to get to your house and have some chewiness and stretchiness to it versus something that hits the dining room after 3 minutes, right? While there are good pizza options in the Heights, other than like Gold Tooth Tony's, I can't really think of a lot of great takeout options. I love Gypsy Poet. Those guys are amazing. They have one of the best pizzas in the city. Their pizza's so good, you should eat it in the dining room. Same with Cultivare. Again, great pizza. Could you eat it in a to-go box? Have I done it? Sure. Should you do it? Probably not. I think
right, Benji... Cultivare is so busy with their dine-in that going there for to-go, it almost... I'm not going to say it feels like you're imposing on them because they do offer yeah. it, and they will absolutely take your money for a to-go order, but it's not how I want to experience Cultivare. I want to experience Cultivare in the dining
room. Totally. I totally agree. And I think Benji saw an opportunity in the Heights. I think, you know, when you are your own customer, that is a good thing from a business perspective. I think Benji wants to offer, fill a need of something he sees for a lot of families, which the Heights has plenty of families. He's a hyper detail oriented person. He knows how to handle big flavors. You know, we do our Habibi night once a year at Winnie's with him and Graham. And I've seen him draft dishes that are great. Like we do like a thinking, you know, throwing ideas at the wall, brainstorming session for dishes for this one special event. And he always has crazy ideas. I think pizza is going to be a great canvas for him to do that. I love the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle reference. I mean, we can't just talk about this and ignore that. Raphael is the best Ninja Turtle, by the way.
I was always a Donatello fan. I don't know what that says about me. I'll leave that to the audience to you know, put into ChatGPT what your favorite Ninja Turtle says about you.
Also the wine angle is brilliant. I think it's a great way to motivate families. Like, we're getting something for the kids, we're also getting something for us.
Right. I think that's right. And I think, you know, I think they're gonna be on third-party delivery apps, but they really want people to order through, you know, their website, make it easy. You know, this is a challenge with which you are intimately familiar, of course.
Yes.
But, you know, pricing it in such a way that it really motivates people to order from their website, having in-house delivery drivers so you're not subject to like, oh, either I have to pay extra or this driver's going to make three other stops before they get to me, yada, yada. Like, I find all of that really appealing. I'm a little bit sad that I do not live in the delivery radius for this, because, you know, it suits my needs really well to have a convenient, like I've been using Home Slice as kind of my delivery go-to, especially ever since Love Buzz closed. But, you know, more pizza is always good with me. So I'm excited for Benji. I'm excited for Jason. And I'm looking forward to trying this.
Yeah, there is a unique ability now for operators using software platforms and POS platforms like Toast to where you can take all of this in-house and you can save a significant amount of money. I deal a lot with these third-party vendors like Uber Eats and DoorDash. And if I could not, I would gladly, but the amount of delivery drivers I would need to do this would be, it'd be a significant management. But because they have a limited dining room, and they're doing a pure focus on this, I think it's a good business angle for sure.
Absolutely. All right. And let's move on to topic number three. Chef Omar Perrinet, who you if you're old school, you may remember when he was the executive chef of Pesca in the Uptown area, or you may know him for Love Croissants or his consulting work at, I mean, dozens of Houston restaurants, is now the new operating partner of Weights and Measures, the restaurant in Midtown. I talked to Omar. He's making some changes to the menu. He's got some plans to, you know, tweak the interior, maybe a little paint, maybe some new chairs and tables. It all depends a little bit on how it's going. Rafi, do you have any fond memories of Weights and Measures from back in the day? Because I know I do.
I can only say I went there once. I'll lean on you for more of experiences over there. I do know that they've changed owners, and Omar is a very talented guy. I went to his Tepesta back in the day, and me and him serve at the farmer's market when Crafita is over there. Now the Texan season is about to end, and I've probably eaten more croissants than I should have over there. But I'm excited. I think he's a talented guy, and I think it's a good opportunity for him.
No, I think that's right. You know, I remember kind of the original days of Weights and Measures. This is 2014, I think, 15, something like that, when that restaurant first opened. And it was such an exciting place because it really was like a true all-day cafe. They were doing breakfast during the week, brunch on the weekends, lunch and dinner, late night, this incredible bar staff. You know, I had Judith Piotrowski on the show a few weeks ago. We kind of reminisced about the beginning days of Weights and Measures. And, you know, as all of its original staff kind of moved on to other projects, you know, it lost its, at the very least, if it didn't lose its luster, it kind of lost its place in the like collective consciousness of people like me. So, you know, it changed hands a couple of years ago. The couple who owns Mastrantos in the Heights bought it, and they had a plan, and I don't know, you know, how much they realized all of their ambitions for it, but, you know, it remains very popular for brunch, especially on the weekends. And so, you know, I think Omar is going to build on that. I think he's going to, you know, liven up the dinner service and bring in some new dishes and just, you know, this is a restaurant that I really valued at one time, and it's close to where I live. So I would like to see it kind of revitalize itself. And I think he's an interesting guy to do that.
Yeah, I think Midtown is in a very interesting transition period. I know the city is looking to invest a lot of money in Midtown, so hopefully that can help them. And, you know, sometimes trying to revive something for the third time is tough, but I think he's the guy to do it.
Right. I mean, this is a restaurant that could probably use a rebrand, right? Like, but then again, like if you have this popular brunch service and that's sustaining your business, like if you change the name and you lose that, you know, you gotta kind of make that decision. I don't know exactly, you know, how that shakes out, but I think this is probably the last attempt, right? This is the last hurrah to make that space work as Weights and Measures. And then, you know, if it doesn't, then Omar and the Xavier and the Mastrantos folks will have some decisions to make, I guess. Well, Rafi, with that, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Rafi, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Oru. This is the new a la carte sushi concept from Kama Hospitality. They are behind both Neo and Kira. You know, Rafi, you know, you know these guys, Paolo and Luis from Kama Hospitality pretty well. So I'm gonna kind of let you take the lead on this. Talk a little bit about your first impressions of Oru and kind of where you see this fitting into their other two existing concepts.
Yeah, so I know they got this property. They've been designing it for a long time. The city did some redoing of the street, which kind of delayed their opening, but now they're there. It's a stunning restaurant, beautiful little vignette into the dining room as soon as you walk in. Very minimalistic, modern design with beautiful artwork. Jeremy, their front of house lead, always has a great playlist going. They have an imported wood counter that's just gorgeous for the actual sushi counter that you're sitting at. And I think what this really means for these guys, you know, they're the third concept after Neo, and which is Omakase, and Kira, which is a hand roll concept. This is kind of the highlights and the best and brightest that ever came out of those Neo menus. Being able to get their nigiri a la carte is a pleasure. Nobody pays more attention to the detail of their fish, the way it's cut, where they get it from, their rice, the attention to rice. Once you understand how much they care about that, and then you eat at other sushi places that might be a step below the quality of what these guys serve, it kind of ruins sushi for you. I tell them that all the time. I really struggle to eat, you know, at other sushi places. And you don't have to ball out when you come here. You can get 7 pieces of sushi, you know, for 50 to 60 bucks. You need some of the best nigiri in the city, or you can, you know, do caviar service and eat uni and do the whole 9 yards if you really want to. I think that's the thing I really enjoy about it. Great date night, great group spot. This is my second meal here, and I'm looking forward to many more.
Yeah, I have also been twice, and I will say I'm with you. I think it's a very minimal design. You know, there's like one big painting on the back wall, but for the most part, it's this rectangular shaped counter, seats about 20 people, and you're at table height, which you know I always appreciate. I just think it's so much more comfortable not to have your feet dangling, and you can kind of look the chefs in the eye, right? That, you know, all of the action is happening right in front of you, especially certainly for the sushi. And it's a large menu. I mean, by the standards of, you know, maybe not by the standards of Katarabata or some of these places, but like coming from Kira, where the menu's pretty tight, or at Neo, where you have no choices. It's just whatever they're serving that night. Like, it's a pretty ambitious undertaking to offer, you know, more than a dozen different styles of nigiri, some different hot entrees, different appetizers, you know, all these different things. And so, you know, I think it's kind of intended to be the sweet spot in their concepts, the kind of place where you know, Kira's very casual, but hand rolled is such a specific craving. But if you want to, you know, if you just want a sushi fix, like a couple times a month, you know, here's Oru, like ready to serve. Talk about some of your favorite dishes, because, you know, I think we split a little bit on some of what we liked and some of what we didn't.
Yeah, so I think one of the great ways to start your meal off there is with their bread service. Very unique and different than what you're going to get at a normal restaurant for bread service. It's served on little Japanese fish taiyaki, which a lot of people are probably familiar with seeing served with dessert. I think the dough they use is really nice and fluffy and eggy, and they serve with a hay smoked butter and trout roe. Just very, you know, indulgent, nice way to start off your meal. We got some miso soup, which is, you don't have to get this here, but it's a good example of something that shows you that everything on their menu is made with intentionality, and it's not just a placeholder. Super umami, you know, not obviously not a pre-made miso soup, but you get a lot of inky sushi restaurants. I think the crudos, which they were generous enough to give to us, are great examples at any Neo experience, at the Kira menus, in here at Oru. It really shows you the way Chef Paolo Luis pull influences from not just Japanese cuisine. For example, and it also shows you their level of technique and how they try to push themselves. For example, our kompachi had a coconut jelly. Our madai crudo had like purslane and lime, which are not anything I would ever associate with those two things. And I know those are going to change and rotate for sure. And then we had nigiri. We each ordered different kinds of pieces. But, you know, order what you normally like when you go here, but ask them what they prefer. I always recommend that. You know, Chef Luis, I mean, I've seen him. I've been on a trip with him, and this guy's just scrolling through options on Japanese seafood marketplaces like a nerd, like me looking at ESPN, you know. So this just to show you how much they care about fish. And then I think the highlight for both of us that night was definitely the rice porridge with Santa Barbara uni. That was just really special. They basically take all their rice and make a special porridge out of it. And that Santa Barbara uni was just creamy and decadent. I had it my first visit there with mushrooms, and that's always on the menu. But this uni version, which is over the top, delicious.
That mushroom porridge was fantastic. And I thought Luis said something interesting. He's like, I want this to be a dish for people who think they don't like uni, like they'll like this. And I think that is such an interesting approach because it can be a polarizing ingredient because of its brininess, because of its texture. And so pairing it with that rice, it gives it that, not crunchiness necessarily, but just like a little more body. And so you're not struggling with the uni in the way that maybe you would if you had it as a piece of nigiri. It was such an interesting use of the ingredient. And, you know, you mentioned the nigiri, but just the, you know, the quality of the chutoro, it just absolutely melted. And, you know, I've been eating kind of domestic or Gulf bluefin, you know, from Kaizen and some of these other places. And it's tasty and I like it, but they're like the real deal stuff from Japan is just next level, you know, as you would expect, I think. You know, the other thing, you know, and then even just the coconut sorbet, right? So
the desserts, you know, are so good.
Such a creamy texture, like such a nice bite. So much coconut flavor and just a really like kind of light and sweet way to kind of counteract the sort of the saltiness of just, you know, all the shoyu that's used to season the sushi, which I'm fine with, but I always leave Japanese restaurants craving something sweet. And so knowing that I can get a very simple, very light dessert at Oru is very appealing to me.
Yeah, their desserts are good. I had the Kuwant last visit, not this visit with you. And it's like this pistachio, you know, lava cake. It's just like super decadent. And that coconut sorbet we had, I think it was wasabi jelly with like just a good example of a great way to finish a meal. And they're, you know, they don't leave the pastry part of their meals to be like an afterthought. Like it's super intentional. Again, you can get the sorbet, or if you want to ball out, that banana and caviar is never a bad move. And
right. That's the Neo. That's the classic Neo ending.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those dishes that if you've never had it, it's one of the best desserts in the entire city of Houston.
You know, the other thing is we didn't get any of the hot entree. I mean, we got the mushroom porridge, but we didn't get the salmon or the chicken. I have to say, I was very impressed by the chicken on my other visit. It's grilled. I mean, it's grilled over charcoal. It really gets that kind of backyard smokiness. And I was impressed by the potato salad. You know, that's not a dish that I associate with a Japanese restaurant, but I do think that it's a nice addition to the menu, and it gives you something that's a little more substantial, you know, as you're sort of, you know, you don't have that issue where you won't leave full. Like if you order, if two people split the chicken, like it will help you leave feeling more full.
Yeah. I got the okoge, the toasted rice porridge last time. And that definitely helped me get full as well. I haven't had the salmon or the chicken. And then they have other starters like the Wagyu lumpia, which you can get with truffle on top. I tried a bite of someone's tofu kurage one time. That was excellent. And then they have, you know, they have a donburi with maguro and stuff like that. Like you can get full here. And I, you know, I think that's like the hard part about when you go to a sushi experience. Like, are you trying to leave there feeling good and get some nice light sushi? Or are you trying to leave full? It kind of depends on what you're in the mood for that day. And I know they also are going to have a lot of rotating hot specials. Like we had their new crispy rice, for example.
Right. I will say that lumpia is a dish that I was really excited about because I love a fried crispy appetizer, and the Wagyu, you know, 15 bucks for a Wagyu lumpia. Like I'm basically okay with that, but it wasn't crispy enough. You know, I've eaten my share of lumpia over the years and this just didn't quite meet that expectation. And then especially when you like, all right, we'll treat ourselves. We'll try something. Give me the shaved truffle for another 15 bucks. It's like, you know, now it's a $30 lumpia and that's a lot of money for a lumpia, and it better be the best fucking lumpia I've ever had in my life. And, it just wasn't like it just, you know, and it's not that I don't think they're capable of doing it. Obviously, or I wouldn't have ordered it, but it does show that, like, still a little bit of tweaking as they kind of get things dialed in. And then, you know, I have to bitch about my ultimate Houston restaurant pet peeve. They want you to order all of it at once. And I hate that. Like, I just think it's so unfriendly to customers. You know, I want to pace out my experience. I kind of want to choose when things arrive and in what order. And this is, you know, I finally shamed a couple of places out of doing this. And so, you know, Oru goes on my list of restaurants where I'm going to bitch about this practice until they stop doing it.
I do know that, just like any sushi counter, I do know that if you want to add on more nigiri, they'll gladly do that for you. They did that for me last time. I ordered some nigiri and I was like, you know what? I just saw someone get some masaba and I just saw someone get that spot prawn. That looks pretty good. You can do that there.
No, and they offered us that opportunity while we were there. But I do kind of want that, like, actually that chicken does look good. Like, maybe I want that, or, you know, I want to have some nigiri and see how I feel. Like, do I want more nigiri? Do I want a hot entree? Do I just want to jump to dessert? Do I want to get up and walk away? Like, I really want that flexibility. And you know, I'm always going to be the consumer advocate. You know, I know that restaurants have their reasons. And I will say this place is popular. We went on a weeknight. It was busy. My first visit was on a weekend. They were on a wait because they couldn't turn people quite as quickly as they wanted to. And so I understand that they want to move people through, you know, politely. I mean, they're giving you, I think, a 2-hour kind of limit on how long they want you to be there. But nevertheless, I'm always going to be the consumer advocate who wants to dictate the experience. And so no to ordering all at once.
I totally get it. And I think a lot of that stuff, the service stuff, you know, they've only been open for a few weeks. It all takes time. They all start to meld and figure out what works for them. And when you have a count, when you have 20 seats, you gotta have that limit. And I think people who frequent high-end sushi experiences are used to that now. And I think that's just part of the territory.
No, I think that's right. I think the only other thing is they have this omakase option priced for two people, which I think is a good deal. Like, it was $200 the first time I was there. It was, I think, $175 or something like that the night that we were there. And that varies a little bit depending on what you get on any given night, which totally makes sense to me. The only problem is that they didn't have, like, a good way to swap. Like, we were two people, and so they have the salmon entree and the chicken entree. And we thought, oh, you know, why don't you bring us one of each instead of two pieces of salmon, right? That would be a really nice way that we could try all everything. And they're priced similarly. Like, I don't need you to, you know, I'm technically the salmon's a little bit more expensive than the chicken. I'm not asking for a discount, but I am saying be flexible enough that you can bring us both. And then somehow in the shuffle of it all, they only brought us one piece of salmon, and then they charged us for the portion of the chicken. And so technically I got shorted a salmon portion in the how it all shook out. And I just think they just need to be a little bit more careful about how they do that for people, or build that into their model just to make it a little bit easier. Because it's obviously, if you're two people, two entrees, you could share them. It would be nice if they had a better way to do that.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think, you know, it's a new restaurant. At the end of the day, I think the thing I'm most impressed by is the quality of the food this early out, which I would expect from these guys. Again, when you go here and the nice thing is you're getting dinner and a show. Sit there, watch how these guys are cutting their sushi, the attention to detail, how they shape the nigiri with their hands. This is all stuff that the way they shape the fish onto the rice affects how it tastes in your mouth, the quality of legit real wasabi that they put under the fish before they put on the rice. It's just things like that. And even small details, something as simple as the pickles that they give you to clean your palate in between fish, in between nigiri pieces, is a good example of, like, this is best in class sushi. I put this at the top of the list with anybody in town. Obviously, I'm very passionate about good sushi, just because I know we've had a renaissance of this over the last few years, and these guys are part of that renaissance, but this is kind of their first time where you don't have to do a tasting menu option for it, which I think a lot of people either don't like that or are intimidated by it from a Neo experience. And now they can come and see what these guys are about.
Right. And I think that's well said. And my criticisms aside, I mean, the food that we ate was delicious. I mean, the fish rolls with the trout roe and the butter was outstanding, and like smoky and creamy and salty in a good way. Like all of the things, like we absolutely crushed that thing. And I would go back here in a heartbeat. I just, you know, I hold them to such a high standard because they're so ambitious, and I want this place to be the best it can be. But I will say, like, we kind of came in with a price target and we said, all right, let's try to spend $200 on this dinner for two. And we basically did that. I mean, you know, we weren't really drinking. Like, I had a beer, but we weren't really drinking, and we still got the good stuff. I mean, we got the, you know, we got the trout roast service and we got the uni rice porridge. You know, we were able to have some of the premium stuff, some of the regular stuff, and still be at, I don't remember, what was it, 210, 215, 220 before the tip. I mean, I was very happy about that. And I think it's very reasonable for the quality of what you're getting.
I totally agree. I think we went into the dinner with those parameters to show people on this show that, like, you can have, for this price point, you can have one of the best sushi experiences in the city and be very satisfied and leave full and have, you know, I think people need to realize when it comes to seafood and when it comes to luxury ingredients, you know, you get what you pay for from a food cost perspective. And I think here you can get more than what you pay for just because of the level of attention these guys pay to.
Absolutely. Well, I know we always conclude with, would you go back? Obviously, I know you're going back.
Yes, I need my wife has this baby and I can go to more sushi dinners, I'll be going back a lot more.
All right, Rafi Nasser, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
You have a great day. Thank you.
All right, that's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Arjav Ezekiel and Tracy Malachek Ezekiel from Birdies in Austin.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.